Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I really like Masters Week where you can sit home and watch ESPN, or I guess they don't actually televise the golf tournament until a certain hour, maybe after 3:30 or so. But Wednesday, you know, as we're doing this podcast for Thursday's show, is the par 3 day, which I kind of love, you know, because you see a bunch of little guys running around, you know, on the course with their dad. Oh, wait a minute. I'm being told that's Brian Harman. Hold on. That's actually a golfer. This dude is short, man. No, but it's you get to see, you know, the families and you know, just the husbands and the wives and it's that's the day. If I could go to the Masters, and it's on my bucket list. Is it on your bucket list? I don't know if you've been. Have you ever been to Augusta?
I have not been to the Masters. I would love to go.
I would love to see it. I just want to see, you know, in its full azalea splendor and all of that. While the walking down the Amen friends. Corner and around the Butler Cabin, and you know, the tradition like no other, and all that. Hello, friends, Jim Nantz stuff. With a piano playing. I got to have piano music in my head as I'm walking these things. But I think Wednesday would be a great day because you can kind of get close to the players in a par three or a practice round, say on Monday. I guess Tiger played some practice rounds on Monday and Tuesday he played 9. So to me, that would be almost better than a tournament in some ways.
Yeah. Have you ever been to like a major tournament?
I have.
Like, and seen the practices, or even just go to the range with these guys.
Not a major tournament, but yeah, but a PGA tournament, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But like, we had the PGA tournament when I was in Minneapolis,
mm-hmm.
and it was up there. It was the only one Tiger led after 54 holes and lost.
Oh, wow.
But to see him just warming up in the tee box.
Oh, like, it's incredible. Driving range with these guys, yeah.
Well, first of all, so other guys are warming up, and he comes up, and the crowds, of course, come around. Sure. And you can see some of those guys quickly are like, let me finish up and get out of here. They don't want
to. I don't need all this. Yeah.
Yeah. One, because Tiger was so good at it. This is back in, what, 2009?
Yeah, he's just crushing the ball.
Yeah. And like, you're just watching him, and there's a tree like 250 yards down the way,
uh-huh.
and he's hitting the trunk every time. And then he starts fading it in, nails it every time. Then we'll draw it in.
So he's literally trying to hit the trunk of the tree?
Just yeah, and he's doing it like every time.
Oh my God.
And then there's a tree like another 50 yards beyond that. Let me go hit that. And he's wow. hitting it every, like, I mean, it was so precise, so clean. Like, and I'm standing right behind him. It was just incredible. I mean, I know I can't golf, but after that, you're like, I shouldn't even ever try again. Like, it's not even worth it. I mean, it was every single shot was perfect. Like, whatever he, you know, hook it in, fade it in, straight. Yeah. It was just incredible to watch the skill that these guys have.
Yeah.
And then on the course itself, of course, but
I just think that, you know, for any professional sport, right, whether you're talking about
mm-hmm.
the NFL, Major League Baseball, you know, the difference between a major leaguer and say even at sometimes a good AAA player, it doesn't seem that big, but there is one, right? So it's hard to appreciate just how great they are at the major league level. But of all the sports, and you can include tennis in this and others, I still think that to be good at golf would require a level that is just unattainable for most, obviously. But the game itself, right? The game itself is even the greatest players in the world go through stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
They'll go through putting yips. They'll go through swing changes. They're constantly tinkering. But to be able to compete on the PGA level and win enough to do this professionally, first of all, it seems like a great life, but you know, you're on the road a lot. There's a lot of sacrifice with that. But to play golf, I mean, that's the old thing. Like, what do you want to do when you retire? I want to play golf. Well, what are you going to do if you were getting paid millions of dollars to do it? It's a surreal life. But those guys are so good, and they're so competitive, and there's so many young players that just keep coming up, you know. Mm-hmm.
I think there's such a mental grind to golf too.
That's the thing. Yeah. It's all mental.
Because it's so much time between shots.
Right.
And it truly is you against the course. I mean,
yeah.
You're competing against others and you may know that they, you know, just hit a great shot or whatever, but I mean, it's not like someone's pitching to you and you've got to figure out where they're going to pitch the ball.
No.
Or, you know, someone's trying to tackle you or block you. Like, yeah. You know, golf is you against the course
every time. Yeah. It's your
ball. But you also have so much time between plays or shots in the term of golf, you know, where like football, okay, every 20, 25 seconds, the ball is being snapped and another play is,
right.
You know, yes, you're on offense or defense. Hockey is constantly up and down the court. Basketball is baseball's a little more close to it
because
there's a lot of time, more time in between.
Well, 20 seconds now, but
right. Yeah. 20, but when you may make a play, I mean, if you're pitching, it's one thing.
Oh, sure. You could be out in the infield and not get a ball hit your way. Yeah.
You're the outfielder. You could go, you know, half a game without seeing anything. Sure. And your at bats are 30 to 40 minutes in between, let's say.
Right.
But, yeah. Golf is, it's a mental grind almost more than the physical and the ability and all that of just, you know, okay, I just shanked a shot. How do I recover? What am I thinking about? You know, and then let everything else around you influencing you, the crowd you hear behind you on a tee, you know, okay, someone just hit a big shot or, you know, how's that?
Yeah, you got to block out everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just you and the ball. And I think the other thing is that people can never really appreciate is the amount of practice time these guys have spent, right? Like the number of golf balls they've hit, you know, even during the week when they're playing, but like, it's just an incredible amount of work to get to that level, you know? And you would think that like, and same is true with tennis, I suppose. Look, a lot of it's, there's some similarities to all of them, but golf, there's so many different shots. There's so many different surfaces. There's so many different.
Well, every course is different.
Every hole on every course is different, right? The tee placements are different on Saturday than they are on Sunday. Like there's just so many factors, the weather. You know, that has to come into play.
But, you know, baseball, the pitcher's mound is the same distance from the plate every
perfect example. Part. Yeah, that's it.
You know, hockey rinks are the same size. Tennis courts are the same size. Right. The net's the same height.
That's right.
Golf, every shot is different. And then every day they move the holes.
They move the holes. Yeah, they make it harder in time, at times. And, you know, this pin plate is just like when you hear Tiger, because the Masters has always been sort of his course, right? With him, he's always talking about, I know where to miss. You know, it's not even about making shots. It's about where you can't miss. You know, you miss over here, you're going to look at a 5 or a 6. Miss here, maybe you can get up and down, you know. And that's as much a part of it as anything. So it's just really, it's fascinating to me. I mean, golf is one of those things I haven't spent a lot of time trying to play. I would love to be able to try to play, but by the time I retire, I'll probably have very few physical skills to be able to do it. But I played enough to know it's one of the hardest things I've ever attempted. And I mean, I've played tennis and, you know, basketball and all those things growing up, but nothing is as difficult sometimes as trying to hit that white ball straight. And the ball isn't moving until you swing at it. You know, that's the other thing. It's just sitting there. Like you think about hockey, right? And then that puck can be coming at you at 110 miles an hour and those guys will redirect it, you know, pass a goalie, pass a sliver of a blocking pad for a goal. I could never figure out how they could ever do that. You know, in a million years, I don't know how you could do that. This golf ball is just sitting there on a tee, and you get to tee it up, at least the first time. And then after that, it's on the ground. It's not moving, but that's the hardest thing to control. You know, and I love watching it because if you've attempted it, you realize just how great these guys are. Not good, but great. And there's plenty of people that play every weekend that are great. But at that level, that's got to be the hardest thing to make it on a PGA tour, like to be one of those guys that are in the running for major championships or even just to win tournaments. You know, it's just it's hard to fathom how good they are. But I love Masters Week because aesthetically, it's one of the most beautiful courses anywhere. And of course, you know, the history of that tournament and everything. And Tiger is back. You know, as we do this, you know, I guess he'll be teeing off here sometime shortly if you're listening to this on Thursday. But, you know, the key to him is the endurance. You know, what can he get from that lake? Because the other thing about Augusta, and I've not been there, but you can appreciate just the topography, like just how hilly it is, you know. And when you complete it, 18 holes of that golf course, you're exhausted.
No question about it. I mean, and you know, that's the other thing is that the golfers, you know, you go out on a Sunday and you want to go play golf or Saturday or whatever day, and generally you're taking a cart.
Hop in a cart, yeah. You
know, they're walking. No, they're not carrying their bags. That helps.
Yeah, it's still a long walk, but, though, man.
Mm-hmm. That's why it gets harder. The older you get, the harder it is to stay relevant in golf.
Yeah, endurance is a big part of it, and I think that, you know, Woods back in the day, when he kind of added the fitness element to it, you see a lot of guys a little more fit than they used to be, you know, back in the day. But, yeah, all that plays into it, you know, and still one of my favorite things to watch. Anyway, we've got your mailbag questions today. It is a mailbag Thursday, so all of these questions answered 100% correctly, or, and this is important, your money back. Might have a couple tomorrow as well. Jason Light, of course, is going to speak about the NFL draft. So we'll have that for you on Friday as he talks on Thursday afternoon. But let's get started with the mailbag.
Well, we'll start with Les, who asked, Rick, would you take Scottie Scheffler or the field in the Masters this week?
Ooh, what a great question. I was usually it was always Tiger Woods or the field. I will definitely take the field if that's the question. Scottie Scheffler, he'd be that guy. He'd be that dude. If he's putting well, and he has been of late, he's already won two tournaments, two major, fairly large tournaments this year, including, I think, TPC. I think for this one, you know, John Rahm is a defending champion. There's a lot of the live guys there, which is going to change the field a little bit. Those guys will be out to prove some stuff. They don't get to play except in the majors for the most part with PGA events. This week, I mean, the easy answer is the field, you know, because just mathematically. But I do believe that the world's number one golfer is going to show up as he has these last few big tournaments. I think he won at Bay Hill too. I'm gonna take Scotty. I would take Scotty this week just because I don't think anybody's playing more consistently. Like, he is consistently in the top five, top ten, and then when you get to Sunday, anything can happen. Now there's going to be weather coming through there, I think tomorrow and the next day, so that will have an effect on everybody. But yeah, Scheffler just seems to be that dude right now. That week in, week out, if it's a major tournament, not a major, but one of the bigger tournaments where, you know, you have the frontline golfers in it. If he's playing, he's on a leaderboard on Sunday, somewhere in the top 2, 3, 4, 5, and then he goes out and, you know, shoots 62 and he wins. So I do think that that this could be a year where he could go maybe even wire to wire. But yeah, it'd be hard to bet against him right now. I don't know that anybody's playing better. I really don't.
Well, we'll go to Michael, who says, great show with Tom last week. At least one show per week with Tom? If Kevin Cash's end of year winning percentage is 500 or below, do the Rays replace him, and with who?
Well, first things first, one show per week with Tom would be phenomenal. But I don't know if you're aware of this show's budget, in that we don't have any for guests. So they appear at the discretion of themselves, basically. And, you know, of course, for those of you who don't know, I mean, even before Steve and I have done this for the last 5 or 6 years, Tom Jones and I did it, I think, a whole year.
It's about 6 months, I believe.
Was it 6 months? Yeah, yeah. Okay. I gave him credit for 6 months that he didn't work, but that's not unusual. But then he kind of opted to when we were going to take this thing sort of, you know, from a revenue producing standpoint, he was moving on to the Poynter Institute of Media Studies. And away from being a columnist with the Tampa Bay Times. So he had other commitments, and he just didn't want to commit to doing it 5 days a week, which, believe me and Steve, completely understand that sentiment right now. And so one show a week would not be enough. I'd like to make it five, but if we could get him for one show, that'd be phenomenal. I just, between his schedule and you know, the amount of money we don't pay, which is zero, that's a lot to ask. So
I would encourage everyone to tweet at him at Tom W. Jones.
It's at Tom W. Jones. No, it's correct. Yep. Yeah.
mm-hmm. at Tom W. Jones. So on X or Twitter, whatever you're calling it these days.
We could have a draft Tom W. Jones campaign. Like, you know, do you want to have him on Sports Day TV? Yes, no. We could run a poll. We could run a, I don't know if this is legal, maybe a GoFundMe page, you know, to get Tom Jones back on the podcast.
Shouldn't we be funding ourselves first?
Well, I think so. Yeah, that's true. Let's think about this. Maybe a GoFundMe page for the Sports Day Tampa Bay, and then with some of those proceeds, after we take our cut,
a portion of the proceeds will be donated.
A portion of the proceeds will be given to Tom Jones for his one day a week appearance. What day would we want that to be? Would we want that to be out of the weekend, coming out of the weekend, best and worst of the weekend, or we want to be that?
Well, Sundays are usually busy for him. That's a busy work day for him. So
big news shows and all that. Yeah. Yeah. Probably have to be probably like Friday, Tom Jones Friday, something like that, especially during football season. Be fun. I don't know, man. I'd live for the day that, you know, maybe he would have less to do and come on here more. But we try to get him. And when we do, it's funny because we'll talk him into it. And, without much arm twisting him, he's always available to us when we want him to be. And then he'll come on and we'll say, yeah, I'll get you off real quick. We'll talk for about an hour and say, let's make this two shows. So he always gives us the twofer because once we get to talking, man, it usually lasts about an hour or so. So that's good for two shows. So hopefully we can have him on again. Look, the one we did, Steve, I think you were covering one of the teams, maybe the Lightning.
Yeah, last week.
Yeah, last week.
And before you went to Denver. So we heard those while you were in Denver.
Yeah, and tried to die of emphysema or whatever the hell I have. We were talking about the whole LSU and Caitlin Clark and covering, you know, covering athletes and covering coaches. We talked a lot about Kim Mulkey and some of the columns that have been written about her. I thought it was one of the better podcasts, you know, that I've done with him because there's a lot of insider-ish stuff with respect to, you know, developing stories, writing columns, giving people opportunities to respond to those before you actually print, you know, just a lot of insider stuff. And then also just, you know, thoughts about women's basketball and what, you know, what Angel Reese and them had meant to it. But so, yeah, it's always... Whenever he's on, man, we'll go down these holes, and it's like, before you know it, an hour has passed. So I love having him on, and hopefully, you know, again, at Tom W. Jones, maybe you guys can convince him to come back and do it more often, but we love having him, that's for sure.
All right, so the other question was, if Kevin Cash's winning percentage is below 500 this season, do the Rays replace him, and with who?
Hell to the no, and with no one. I mean... First of all, they're on a run of, is it six straight playoff appearances or five? I think it's five going on six, right?
Yeah.
So this would be, so five straight playoff appearances with a franchise.
It's amazing that we lose track of how many consecutive playoff appearances. Exactly. When there's a lot of cities that would love to have this problem.
I know. How many is it now? How many?
The Bucks have, what, four? The Lightning are now seven since they've qualified. The Rays are five or six. The Rowdies are like five as well, or four.
Think
or five.
About that. Like, this is, and people don't understand this. They don't. And we've talked about it because it's been maybe a year or two since a world championship somewhere, or since the Lightning, you know, hoisted the Stanley Cup or the Bucks.
It's been 3 years since we've had a boat parade. I mean,
three
it's
whole
time.
Years since a world champion. Like, what's going on? What's wrong with Tampa? But the reality is this is the absolute, like, zenith. This is the gold standard of Tampa Bay sports right now, because like you mentioned, the Tampa Bay Lightning, they've set the standard, right? Is it six or seven straight playoff appearances?
Seven and 10 out of 11.
10 out of, think yeah, about
the,
that.
The one now. Year they missed it by 1 point.
Yeah, think about that. 10 out of 11 postseason appearances for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Three Stanley Cup appearances, two Stanley Cup champions, right, during that time. And then the Buccaneers, they're going on their fourth straight, they've had four straight playoff appearances. They've had three division titles and a Super Bowl, right? They're second of their, you know, since 2002. And so you just think about that run, the longest streak, playoff streak in the NFC, active, right? And then the Tampa Bay Rays, I don't know many sports towns or sports areas that have, you know, three major professional sports teams that are consistently have made the postseason for like last 5 or 6 years.
Well, that's why I look at like Detroit, and we saw the Bucks play the Lions in the postseason, and why that city went nuts.
Oh my God, they went bananas. I mean,
the Pistons have stunk for years. The Red Wings have stunk for years. The Tigers have stunk for years. And the Lions stunk for generations.
It's true.
You know, and that's why that town went so nuts, because they've had nothing for
years. They were starved, And I mean, it's cyclical. I understand that. There was a time, and I think it's just basically wherever Tom Brady lives, but there was a time when, you know, it was the Red Sox, the Bruins, right, the New England Patriots. They were all king of the world. They're having, you know, parades every day. But that ran its course until Tom came down here and he made this Tampa Bay. So the key is Brady, I think.
Yeah. It's still amazing. Like, New York has not had a parade since 2011. And how many teams do they have?
Oh my God. I mean, you can count
the Giants,
New York,
the Giants Super Bowl in 11. It's the last parade that New York's had.
Is that right? Eli Manning?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's a long time.
Like the Yankees or Mets.
Talking about the Yankees and the Mets.
The Rangers, the Islanders, the Devils, the Giants, the Jets, go through all the sports.
Right.
The Nets, the Knicks. Mm-hmm. Like, how many pro teams do they have there?
Yeah, I mean, you just named about 8 of them, I think. So, yeah, that is incredible, you know. A lot of big cities, Los Angeles, Chicago, like, Tampa has held its own and then some. And I don't think, for whatever reason, I can't put my finger on it. I mean, obviously, people want to see the Rays not just go to, but also win a World Series, and I totally get that. You know, I was thinking about this the other day, and I don't know what the answer to this would be, to be honest with you. Like, the Marlins started out, I think, 0-9. You know, and they finally won a game or two. But, you know, when you think about when Miami came into play, which was before the Rays started playing in 98, I think the Marlins may have started a year earlier.
They were a few years before that.
Or a couple years earlier. Yeah. Okay. So, but they have 2 World Series, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when you think of the Marlins, I don't think of them this anywhere close to the way I think of the Rays, but the Rays don't have.
Well, they have 2 and then they kind of tore it down after each one.
They ripped it apart. Yeah, they spent a lot of money on free agents. They got them, credit for them, man. They got themselves over the top. They won those World Series, but very little to cheer about in between. And I struggle with this sometimes. People are like, well, would you rather have a team that's in the playoffs every year that never can't get over the hump? Or, you know, give me my world championships and then, what, 8 or 10 years of drought? I don't know that I want to go through that if I were a fan.
Well, your hope is you're doing what the Lightning are doing now, where you win some in there, but you're not going to win every year.
Absolutely.
But you're competing every year. I mean, that's, you know, the good organizations, that's what you're hoping for, is, you know, some consistency. Maybe every year you don't have a chance to win at all.
Right.
But you're competitive, you make it to the dance, which gives you a chance.
Right.
You know,
I think that should be the goal of every team. You know, every franchise in sports should be that team that wants to consistently be in contention. Because the theory is, if you can be that team that's in contention every year, one at some point you're going to break through. You know, you just are. I think the Texas Rangers were the perfect example of that. You know, team that wasn't playing particularly well at all going into the postseason, had a few things fall their way. Next thing you know, they get in the tournament. They win 2 games in Tampa. Mm-hmm. And they move on, and they're World Series champions.
Florida Panthers last year in hockey had Pittsburgh had 2 bad losses, like Ottawa and somebody else that was out of the playoffs to end the season, which put the Panthers in as the last team in the playoffs. And they went to the Stanley Cup final. They didn't win it, but I mean, they were that close to not making it. Had Pittsburgh just beaten 1 of 2 teams that were out of the playoffs at the last 2 games of the season, Florida's not in.
Yeah. Look, I know it didn't happen. And so to the victor goes the spoils. But here's the thing. Last year, the Buccaneers had to, you know, come from the dead practically after they had lost 5 out of 6 and then turned it around. They win the division. And then they play a Philadelphia team who, you know, no doubt had been 10-1, was not playing well at all. But then they play the Eagles and they destroy them. I mean, they dominated the Eagles. And then they go to Detroit, where it was absolutely pandemonium up there. And Detroit is a really, really good team. But you know what? It's 17-17 in the fourth quarter of that game. You know, they are right there. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to have to start looking at flights to San Francisco. Now you say, well, even if they had won, they weren't going to beat the 49ers. Are you sure? You know, are you sure they wouldn't have? Because I saw Detroit get up on the 49ers really fast. And, you know, maybe Tampa Bay's defense holds them. And I'd seen them go to San Francisco early in the year. And the score might not indicate it, but, you know, they one more drive, they take the lead in that game in the fourth quarter. You know, one more touchdown. So, like, that's the thing. You just don't know how close you can be once you get into the postseason. Things have to fall right. You have to play well. Got to have some breaks and all that. But it's just about, to me, and Tony Dungy always said that, like, just give me that team that every single year people are going to pick you to win a division, or people are going to say you're going to make the postseason, and then you do. Because sooner or later, it will fall right for you, or you will have that super team, and you'll be able to put it together and you can go the distance. But if you're not there, if you're not even a contender, if you're not in the postseason, I know this, you have no chance. You know, so if I'm a fan, I'd rather every year when the season starts think, my team could be there. My team could win it all.
No question. I mean, that's the goal of sports is championships. I mean, playoffs are important because that's the only way you can win a championship. But the goal is to win it. But if you're not in, you got no shot. That's why, you know, you hear the Lightning every year just talk about, we just want to get in the playoffs. Like, we don't care where we're seated. We don't just got to get in.
And it's a different season, right? I mean, it really is. I mean, like, you got to be playing well. And the Lightning sometimes aren't playing well because it doesn't seem to matter for them because they can flip that switch. They've been there enough now. But I think that I think that a team like Lightning, they understand how to navigate. The postseason is a different animal. There's, you know, the great thing about it is that throughout the regular season, you know, there's places that are harder to play than others. There's schedules that are more difficult than others. Even in the NFL, they talk about parity. But if you're a first-place team, you're playing a bunch of first-place teams, right?
And but even some of the scheduling, coming off a Monday night game, or you've got a Thursday night game this week, or you've been on the road for three straight games. Like, there's things like that that affect everything.
Totally. You know? And especially in hockey, right? Like, the level playing, what levels the ice in hockey in the postseason is – nobody has a back-to-back, you know, unless you all do, right? Everybody's going to get a day off in between games. Like, everything is more, and I think that's true of football. Now, you know, you might have a situation where, you know, you played a Monday night game and then they kind of, you know, didn't do you any favors and made you play the next Sunday, and so you have one less day to prepare, and maybe your opponent doesn't. But for the most part, the postseason is just that. Everyone has pressure. Right. And some teams like Philadelphia last year, I didn't think Philadelphia was a bad team. And I don't know why they started losing games. I think their head coach messed around, fired his defensive coordinator. I think that sent a bad signal to a bunch of players that, you know, now we're questioning not only what they were doing, but what they had done. And for whatever reason, that team was not playing up to its talent. And that's part of it. Right. But you got a chance, and it's how teams react to pressure. Because you can either feel pressure or you can apply it. My good friend John Gruden used to say, I tell you what, man, you can feel pressure or you can apply it. You know what I mean? And he's right. The pressure bursts a pipe, and it will. And so that's the great equalizer, right? Like the underdog. How many times you hear people say, they're playing with house money. They got nothing to lose. The expectations are all on this other team. That's real. That's real, man. People feel that. Now, their expectations are on the other team because typically they're much better. You know, they've accomplished much more. But that doesn't mean that on that any given Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, whenever that puck is dropped or the ball is kicked off, man, those guys, it's how you're going to react to what's happening that day. You know, it doesn't matter how many games you won. It doesn't matter, you know, how many trophies you have from past seasons. It's just about for those 3 hours, if it's football or whatever. So that's what's great about the postseason. So I fire Kevin Cash. Is that where we started at?
Yes.
No, absolutely not. Because, first of all, he's not going to swing a bat. He's not going to throw a baseball. Now, if you told me, you know, I mean, first, I think they have a reasonable chance to make the playoffs. We're sitting here in April. They're 500 or whatever. It's hard to predict that. But the run that they're on would tell you that this is an organization that's always going to put itself in the position. And we know Kevin Cash is – there's a reason why he's one of the longest tenured managers, or if not the longest tenured manager in baseball. It's because you get a level of consistency with him, and his teams reflect that, right? He's the same guy every day when he needs to be. You know, if he needs to be different, he's different. But he understands, you know, how to manage that team under the sort of the Rays way, with all the analytics and all the numbers and things that they throw at you. He's comfortable doing that. Maybe as comfortable as any manager I've ever seen. Like, it's remarkable how he manages personalities, you know, and how he gets buy-in. It's easy. It's kind of, you know, the Rays have done this long enough that I think when players come here from other organizations, they already have the expectation that, hey, this is a good organization. They're going to help me. They help everybody that plays for them. So I think that that's now been well established, along with all the GMs and personnel guys that have come from Tampa that are around Major League Baseball, and managers for that matter. So I think we're a little past the wonder stage, but you still have to have buy-in. You still have to have, you know, guys every day accepting what role they're going to play and trusting the Cash and the organization is going to put them in the best position to be successful. And that, you know, when you're living with 25 guys and it's not the same 25 for 6 months out of the year, to keep them all motivated and happy and try to fulfill their own goals and go out there and win is not an easy job for anybody. But Cash does it probably better than anyone I've been around this side of, say, maybe Joe Maddon, who did it a different way entirely. But now Cash has even exceeded what Joe Maddon did here, which is unbelievable, right? That he would replace somebody like that and then actually eclipse him in terms of just his overall success. So no, they're not, believe me, they're not firing Kevin Cash, even if they have a losing season. And I would not bet against him not making the postseason. I just wouldn't. I think they'll find their way, you know, and they'll get some arms back. They still haven't seen the big contributions from Yandy Diaz, from Randy Arozarena. There's so many guys who haven't really hit their stride yet, and they will, you know, and you know, health is a big part of it. Anything can happen. But if you weren't to make the playoffs, it's not going to be because of Kevin Cash. And I would think, yeah, there's no danger that this guy's going anywhere.
All right. Mark in Illinois emailed you, and this kind of dovetails off this. He says, longtime listener of the podcast. I'm a big Bucks, Lightning, and Rick Stroud fan. I've never gotten into baseball, but I have a baseball question. Listening to the pod, I hear about the Rays a lot. The Rays have had a lot of success over the years with one of the smaller payrolls in baseball. Are the Rays built to just be a strong competitor in the regular season? Or are they built to peak and then rebuild after players are sold off, like the Marlins of the 90s?
Well, we just discussed the Marlins a little bit like that, and they did it a different way, right? They kind of went all in those years and spent money in free agency, and, you know, they did win a couple of World Series, which is the goal of every team every year. And they are not going to give those trophies back, no matter how they did it or what happened after that, which is fine. But I think that it is worth asking, and they will continue to try to figure this out. Does this sort of methodology that they have here of, you know, having a beating teams throughout 162 game season, you know, you kind of say this about the Rays is that their 40 guys or 50 guys are better than your 50. What I mean by that is no one's going to play with the same 25 for 6 months, right? Where the Rays get you is if they have injuries, if they have guys that aren't effective, whether it's matchups, whatever it requires, they're so good and so deep in their farm system and so capable of finding guys from different teams that maybe teams have given up on and bringing them in and saying, hey, just do this one thing or do this, throw these two pitches or whatever that is, that over the course of 162 games, those analytics, those numbers play out in their favor. They really do. You know, that's why they're so deep into them. There's a track record there now. And however, and this is when you get back into the whole Blake Snell discussion of a few years ago when Kevin Cash pulled him against the Dodgers, there is a human element, you know, to games. And when you get in the postseason, it's you know, win or go home. I mean, it's not single elimination, but like that first series against the Texans, if you're not on your game, you know, after one game, even though you got, you know, or the, I'm sorry, I call it the Texans, the Rangers, even though you got the Rangers at home, you know, you lose that first game, you're playing for your entire season, you know, and then again, that goes back to pressure. Now, does the analytics work for the postseason? Does it work for one series? Does it work for one game? That's when I think there has to be a little bit of understanding and give and take about human emotions, what guys are feeling. You know, there are many times when I just knew in the postseason that Brandon Lau was not going to hit the baseball. I don't care what situation he came up in. I don't care what the analytics said. I could tell by his confidence and the way he was swinging or not swinging that this is not the guy you want up in this situation, you know? And then there's other times when, you know, you feel good about who you got up there and why. But it's just that so many of their decisions are made for 162 games. And I do wonder, and I think it's worth asking, you know, can you manage the same way? Can you use the same analytics? Or how much of the human element do you have to take into account? And how much of that will they allow Kevin Cash or somebody else to say, not so fast? I know it says that we should go to the bullpen here, or I know it says that, you know, even though he's pitched really well, the next time around in the lineup, the average is going to go up for the opposing team, and so therefore we need to get him out. I think there comes a time in a short series or in the postseason when some of that has to go out the window. And I don't know that they've threaded that needle just yet. We really only seen it play off out against them a little bit. We've also seen it play for them. But that is I think it's a fair question to ask it. And until or unless the Rays break through and win a World Series, there will always be that question, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what they do, because it's a larger sample size, does this work only in the regular season? But when you get in these short series, 2 games, 5 games, 7 games, you know, can you still apply those same analytics?
And well, that's the thing about analytics, is that it takes a big sample size to work out.
To prove
now,
it. Yeah.
It can work over short, but it's more luck at that point. You know, yeah. you go to Vegas, look at the size of those casinos. The house wins. Yeah. But any given night, you may be red hot and win a bunch.
Absolutely. People walk out of there with money every day. Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of them do not.
But if you play long enough, the odds are you won't.
You'll get it back.
The odds are for the house in that regard.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, and in regards to rebuilding, the great thing about the Rays is that their farm system is deep because they keep trading major league guys for younger guys. And, you know, they have a farm system that just keeps replenishing when they lose guys.
Yeah.
And you know, they had a couple bad years back in like 15, 16, 17, because they traded off the David Prices and the Chris Archers and that. And they stock their farm system, and it's loaded. Like, they're one of the best in baseball still every year, even when they keep calling guys up, because they keep reloading. And so the great thing about the Rays, you don't have to rebuild. The question is, do you have enough to win in a 3-5-7 game series multiple times in the postseason to get to the World Series?
Yeah. And you know what really, that like I think it's mostly on one side of the ball. Like, their pitching seems to play out pretty well, short series, long sample size. By the time they get to October, even though these guys have thrown a lot of innings, you kind of know what you're getting out of everybody that they run out there. I think the question has been, I think in the postseason, you need clutch bats. You need guys that rise to the moment, right? When we've seen Randy do it, you know, and really over the last few years, it was Randy and Wander were kind of the guys that, okay, didn't, you know, pressure didn't, they seemed to thrive on it. They seemed to, you know, to produce. But again, going back to that pressure thing, like, it's not for everybody. And so I don't know that. Now, when I look at the teams that win World Series, they seem to have those superstar, you know, those A players, those all-star players that are in the lineup, typically in the middle of their lineup, that always seem to come through. You know, that the bright lights, they really shine. And I'm not sure that the Rays have enough of those guys, you know, in the lineup 1 through 9, to where they rise to another level. Because I think that's where, you know, that's why, for example, that Bryce Harper makes the money he makes, right? Now, that guy's great during the regular season, but in the postseason, he's nails. You know what I mean? Like, there's just certain guys. You know, Reggie Jackson back in the day, Mr. October, right? Derek Jeter, Mr. November. Like, there's certain guys you need those stars to play their best and just take over series and stuff. And I haven't seen, from the offensive side, I haven't seen the Rays do that yet. I just haven't.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
All right, Craig in Vegas asks, we hear about all the arm injuries in Major League Baseball now. We hear pitch clock, max velocity, spin rate, ball, rosin bag, etc. causing this. Is not the root cause in Little League and AAU ball? These kids were never shut down. They play every weekend all year. To me, this is the start of the issues. When will it be addressed?
First of all, thank you, Craig in Vegas, for being a loyal listener and ask some great questions, as a matter of fact. I love this topic, Steve, and I could do a whole show on it. Because I'm invested in this a little bit. I have, you know, kids of friends that play and have gone through these injuries. And I played the game, and in my lifetime, the game is taught different. The emphasis is different. And unfortunately, and we've had this discussion on this show many times, I absolutely abhor the fact that 8, 9, and 10-year-old kids have to make a choice what sport they want to play because of all these club teams, you know, and that could be soccer, that could be basketball, that could be football, not so much club football, but let's face it, it's different, and certainly baseball, you know, at an age when they should just be growing into their bodies. I've talked to pediatricians about this, and especially those that specialize in, you know, orthopedics or, you know, performance type injuries, and what you have that goes on, and it's not just limited to baseball, but what you have are overuse injuries. And that is, if I'm only playing one sport, if I'm doing the same thing with the same muscle group over and over again, I may not be developing other muscle groups, and I'm overusing those that I'm playing with, right? If I'm only playing baseball and throwing the ball overhand off the mound, if I'm only, you know, playing soccer, you know, there are, at a young age, you know, your bodies are still growing, and you want to develop muscle groups throughout your entire body. And you don't allow yourself to do that by just playing one sport. You just don't. Some sports you run more, some sports you jump, some sports you throw, some sports you do all three. But to become the best athlete, right, the best version of your body, of your physiology, to be strong and have some endurance, you really got to develop your entire body, your entire being as it's growing, you know. And you kind of stunt the growth of some of those areas if you just say, I'm only going to pitch, or I'm only going to play baseball, or I'm only going to play, you know, soccer or whatever. Specifically with baseball, the biggest change in the game that I've seen, and it's really shocking, is the emphasis on velocity. You know, the curveball and the breaking balls and, you know, 8 and 10 year olds throwing those things, that's happened since I played. And it was frowned upon then, and it should be frowned upon now, right? And we talk about, you know, specialization. What happens is, you know, Johnny's playing Little League 2 or 3 days a week with a bunch of guys that are out there just to enjoy it. But then there's 5 or 6 guys on his team to play AAU ball. So they're playing 8 games during the week between Little League and AAU ball. Now, you know, there's an element of wanting to win at certain levels. And so who's keeping track of his innings? You know, who's keeping track of how many curveballs he's snapping off? I've seen it. I've seen guys have arm trouble, you know, 10, 12 years old. That used to be the thing, right? Like, well, hey, watch the curveball. I still don't believe that, you know, a kid under the age of really 15 needs to be snapping curveballs to anybody, because if, you know, pitching is about location and changing speeds. And you can do that with fastballs and changeups and things like that. That aside, the biggest change is velocity. The emphasis on velocity has taken some of the best arms in this game, and you see what happens. There's Tommy John surgeries every week, it seems. And sometimes before guys even make it to college, they've had one, maybe two. By the time they get to the majors, they've definitely had one and maybe going on 2 or 3. And I think it's, you know, and I'm not into, because I didn't play during this time where spin rate became a big thing and that sort of stuff. But I do know at the college level, and I won't name names here, and there's a difference between college and pro as well. And a lot of guys that play in college, you know, you wonder, okay, who's looking out for them? Because those college coaches get paid to what? Win, not develop. Their paycheck, their longevity is based on winning, okay? In the pros, it's based on development. You know, those guys in the minor leagues, it's nice if they win, but they're judged on how well they develop our players. You know, you can keep your job a long time if you're one of those managers or pitching coaches that can develop young arms and make them successful at the next level. It's not so much about wins and losses. But I know guys in college baseball that have just been overused. And, you know, they go to these camps. Like, if you have a young son, if you're listening to this, and you have a son that has some talent and he's got a good arm, put the gun down, man. You know, put the radar gun down, because I've heard the dads, right? He's throwing 90. If I can get him to throw 90, he's going to get a college scholarship by the time he's 18. Hey, Johnny's throwing 92. He said, hey, he went to the All-Star. I hate these things. They have these All-Star showcases at various cities and stuff. He went to the All-Star showcase. Well, you know what happens at the All-Star showcase? So the dude's on the mound before you, and he's maybe 6'3", 210, and he's throwing 93, 94. So you get out there, and maybe you've topped off one time at 90, 89, 88. You go out there, max effort, every pitch, just trying to compete with the gun. That's not baseball, man. That's the way you hurt your arm, you know? But it happens everywhere. And I wish the emphasis went back on pitching, you know, and you risk this. You sound like the old guy, but Steve, you know this all too well. Did Greg Maddux throw 95 miles an hour? Did it hurt him?
I can't remember which pitcher the other day came out and was saying, I don't think it was Verlander, but there's been several of them talking about the injuries in that. And just saying that the problem is every pitcher is going max effort on every pitch now.
On every pitch. And they tell you, and I think the Rays are part of this too, and I think they have to own it, is, and I don't know that they say this because I'm not in those conversations, but it seems to me that it's like, it's not about how many guys even, do they even care, make it to the fifth inning, which they need to change those rules too, that you can't get a win unless you get to the fifth inning or, you know, get through the five. But it's kind of like, hey, 2 times through the lineup, give us all you got. You know, go out there, every hitter, muscle up, fastball as hard as you can, sliders, whatever. Get us to the fifth. Get us to the fourth, you know, 4 2/3. Like, we, then we'll go bring another guy in to throw 98 for an inning, and then another guy to throw 96 for an inning. But every guy that goes on that mound, they're all doing the same thing. They're max effort. Everything's max effort. And I just don't think, first of all, the human arm wasn't built to throw overhand. If you don't believe me, go talk to some softball pitchers that can, you know, throw a complete game one day and go back out and throw another one the next day. But it's a problem. And it's a and I think it's interesting, like these last few weeks we were like, oh, baseball's got an arm problem. We got a problem. We got to address it. Well, how long were you going to wait to do this? I mean, this has been going on for years.
Baseball doesn't fix anything until they have to.
I know.
They didn't with steroids. They didn't with, like, yeah. they don't fix anything until they're forced to.
Exactly.
They're almost as bad as the NCAA, except the NCAA won't even fix it when they have to.
That's true. But you're right. Baseball is the worst at that. And the thing is, you can't fix it at the major league level or the minor league. You know where it needs to be fixed? With the mom and dads at home. That's where it needs to be fixed. It needs to be fixed at the youth level. It needs to be fixed with a mentality that says, hey, listen, my kid doesn't have to choose at age 10 what he's going to go for a scholarship for in college. You know, he's going to play basketball during basketball season. He's going to play football during football, or whatever that is, tennis. I don't care, lacrosse. But let them be kids. Let them develop their whole being. You know, some of the best arms, and people will tell you this, some of the best arms in the major leagues are guys that did other stuff. You know, They played other sports.
I've talked to some scouts that says, you know, I can go out and watch a young game, you know, and they're not scouting this game, but maybe their kid or a friend or whatever, and they're watching an 8, 9, 10-year-old game. Pick this, it doesn't matter, sport, baseball, football, whatever. And you can pick out the studs and you go, this kid's going to be great. Yep. And by age 14, he'll be great, but it may not even be in that sport.
That's like, correct.
They may, you know, that you burn them out, you whatever, they pick up a different sport. Like, you know, you may know the kids that can be good athletes in that, but at age 8, 9, 10, when we're trying to, you know, well, we got his fastball up to 60 miles an hour already or whatever, you know, at that age, The scouts will tell you, I think he'll be a good athlete. I have no idea what sport he'll be in.
That's right.
Because they see it happen all the time.
Yeah. And you just hope that they get a chance to be a good athlete, because if their dads or their moms say, you're only playing soccer or you're only playing baseball, or you're only playing. Like, I've had this. I tell this story. I don't want to use names. I know a guy who coached baseball his whole life, played it, coached it at the youth level, AAU level, all that stuff. His son was a really good player. Really good player. Didn't grow very quickly, you know, kind of a small, like, reached puberty later than some. And everybody thought, well, this kid, you know, he's played since he's 8 years old. I mean, he's obviously going to go a long way in high school. Or by the time that kid was 15, now I give him credit for this. He said, I'm done. I'm done with baseball. I just want to enjoy being a guy, being a kid. You know what he did? And I won't add the rest of this or it would be too revealing, but he just said, I want to try football. And he wasn't a good football player, but he's like, I want to be with my guys. You know, I just want to be one of the dudes. I think that's cool, running out of the tunnel. You know, I've always wanted to try it. And he never picked up a baseball again. And I think that story is probably true in soccer a lot of times, probably true in tennis, probably true in any sport. If you start at a very young age and only play, you're going to have burnout. You just are going to have pushback, you know, and you're going to have injuries too. And ask any pediatrician that sees these over, what they see are overuse injuries, because the kids have been doing the same things with the same muscle groups over and over again until they have some injuries or breakdowns. So if I listen, I don't have all the answers, and I'm sure there are plenty of fathers and moms out there going, you don't know what you're talking about. My kid played AAU ball from the time he was 8. He's in, you know, the major leagues today. Good for you. Good for you. Good for them. Terrific. It worked. Right. But that's not the norm. And you just wonder if you're robbing these children of opportunities to experience other things, you know, instead. And it's on the adults, because, you know, coaches are making these guys choose. Do you think you can make a high school baseball team if you're not playing AAU ball by the time you're 13 or 14 years old? I don't. You're not going to walk on, you know, at Jesuit, right? And just get in the cage or get on the mound and show them what you can do. You know, you're going to have to been with a group playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they won't even look at you if you're not on a travel ball team and have been for years.
That's what I'm saying. Like, and you have to be on. Usually, there's a you know, something that correlates to their team, right? Mm-hmm. There's their travel ball team.
Yep.
And so if you can't do that and make that, you got no shot. And I hate that, you know. So they it's almost now just part of sport that you have to decide. It's like, well, you don't understand. You have to decide. These coaches are making. That's we've got to change that somehow, some way. Or you're just going to see what you're seeing in baseball, and I'm sure it's true in other sports. But you're going to continue to see some of the best arms get injured long before they should. All right, excellent, excellent mailbag questions. We got a couple more we can add tomorrow as well. I'll be at One Buck Place around 1 o'clock today to listen to Jason Light talk to us about the NFL draft, maybe a little free agency, where they stand right now in terms of the salary cap. If it hasn't happened by the time you hear this podcast, I expect Antoine Winfield Jr. to become the highest paid safety in football. You know why I expect that? Because according to my sources, the Buccaneers, Antoine Winfield Jr., working on a deal, make him the highest paid safety in football. That's according to Adam Schefter at ESPN. So, yes, it's going to happen. Now, that's agent talk. That's not coming from the Bucs. So maybe the agents think that they're getting really, really close. But that's going to happen pretty soon. And then, you know, we'll have a chance to talk to Jason about the draft, where their needs are. I'm sure he'll tell us who they're taking at number 26. So check that out on TampaBay.com and in the Tampa Bay Times. The Rays have the day off before they begin to host the San Francisco Giants come to town, which is a rare treat.
Yeah, Dave Wells' Hall of Fame induction for the Rays Hall of Fame will be Sunday.
Oh, man, that's going to be awesome. That'll be great. Yeah, it's a good thing. Good weekend to hit that up. And then the Lightning host the Senators as they begin to wind down their regular season, final game next Wednesday, and then playoffs probably Saturday or Sunday after that. So we're just about a week away from NHL postseason, which is really awesome. But we'll have more of your mailbag questions tomorrow, as well as our reaction to Jason Light and the Bucks and anything else that happens in the world of sports. Thanks for listening. As always, for Steve Burstyn, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.